screen, you don't have to go to the track anymore. You just push the button and there they are. It's great for your kids. Keeps them off the street. You got kids, you know, that you're worried about getting into narcotics or something. What you do is you rig the thoroughmation so they know which horse is going to come in. They bring in all their friends and neighbors. They bring lollipops and all-day suckers and yo-yos and dimes and nickels if they're really into big money. And they book the race. Teach your kid business management at an early age. Watch him go across the screen. Bet on him. Keeps him off the street. Keeps him out of trouble. We've cut mugging down in Riverside County by 43% with that. That's the warm-up. All right, beginners. We'll pretend that those of you who are truly not beginners are. Interesting conversations I've had with some true beginners that I never had the pleasure of meeting before who are here for the first time is their enthusiasm. It was unbridled. And that even though they're 30s, 40 years old, they're like children who just discovered that there was a candy shop in their neighborhood or a toy store. Or somebody told them about Christmas and Santa Claus for the first time. It's wonderful to see that enthusiasm. And it's also, they asked me, who in my area is using this methodology that you could get me together with? And my question is, don't. That's my answer, I mean. The minute you get together with somebody else and make this into a joint venture, that marvelous enthusiasm, that childlike quality of discovery disappears, because the loudest, most egocentric, opinionated jerk always dominates. And I can see nodding heads out there. Always dominates what we like to call handicapping, which evolves into a session of horse players. The other thing I like to tell beginners right at the beginning, and this is the one that you're going to have a lot of trouble getting through your head, and some people never get it through, unfortunately. And that is that if you adopt this methodology, now I can't control what you do, but if you adopt this methodology, you cannot use it in a smorgasbord with other methodologies. The reason being is quite simple, and I'll give you an example. Every time my subscription to Phillips Racing newsletter runs out, Russ Dietrich writes me a letter thinking maybe I'm not going to resubscribe, which I always do, but telling me that, oh boy, here you got a great new program, why don't you send it to me and we'll test it and give you real favorable publicity and all that stuff. I said, Russ, I'm not going to send you my program to have some flaky horse player test it, because he's going to test it with mainstream principles in choosing the contenders. And there is where so many of you who do fail, or who might be destined to fail if you don't heed this advice, which is more than just advice, it's a caveat. This is a complete methodology. Somebody this morning said that to me in great surprise. You know, this is not just a picking thing. This starts at the very beginning. It looks at form cycle. It looks at contender selection in an entirely different way from what we've been reading about. I understand you just hit a big horse over at the reel, or a big profit from a little horse. Or... Oh, it's all over the room. Did you have to sign a tax release? Too many people, now that Tom's here, we can talk about him. Too many people who have not got the background or the talent or the energy try to be Tom Brohammers overnight, and they wonder why they fail. They try to be Marion Joneses and wonder why they fail. Now, Tom and Marion are two good examples, and relatively the two few, I don't think we have any others in Perco who are teaching members who came to us as very adequate handicappers in their old life. Tom started when he was 14 years older, if not younger, and learned all these things that he knows. And it's like the bottom of an iceberg. It builds up and builds up and builds up. So someone says, oh boy, that Tom Brohammer, he's great. I want to do it the way he does it. But folks, unless you were steeped in handicapping from a teenager, you're never going to be able to duplicate what Tom Brohammer does. Marion Jones started handicapping in the streets of Arkansas when he was 7 years old. Says he wanted to get out of those cotton fields. Wasn't that, isn't that the story? He had a driving ambition to get out of a secondary life pattern into a primary life pattern of where he could have opulence and wealth that he enjoys today, and that was a driving need for him to learn everything he could as from a child. Am I being fairly accurate here, Marion? And in the Navy, he honed his skills on everything he could get a hold of. He'll tell you about it. And was able to adapt his knowledge to the methodology, was able to discard the myths and the inaccuracies, as was Tom Brohammer. So we don't want to try to emulate these people who started when they were children, because we'll never be able to duplicate it. We have also in this room my son, sitting in the back there, the good-looking member of the family. Raise your hand, son. Who just started last month. And he's going to give a presentation tonight, which we call Out of the Mouths of Babes. He was... Tom Brohammer retired from the phone company. The phone company retired my son in a slightly different circumstance. Brohammer gets a pension. My son gets unemployment. So he decided in his pushing in the later part of his 30s that he wanted to make an income from this. I'd always told my children what I did before was I was a towel boy in a brothel. And finally he found out what I was really doing, and he wanted to emulate it. And so he started from absolute scratch, from absolutely no knowledge, could not read a racing form, had never seen a racing form, and followed a prescribed training procedure. And right now he has, for the last 3 weeks, hit 60% with an average mutual of 1240. Now, he's going to meet a bunch of horse players, I'm sure, that'll ruin him. He'll go down to 50%. Then I'll have to get him, grab him by his plentiful hair and pull him back up and tell him not to listen to all that stuff. But because he's a purist, because he listens to no voice other than those enunciated in certain manuals and by myself, he is doing very well. And you'll look at some of his pace lines tonight in the manual, and you'll say, geez, this kid ain't very bright. Because he may go back... No. This is a different kid. He may go back where you wouldn't go back, and he may pick a line that you said is not a good line, but he gets the winners. Why? Because, well, he'll tell you. If they don't loom up off the page at him, he doesn't bet them. He doesn't put them in the computer. He has listened devotedly what we said. In other words, he had nothing to unlearn. He did not try to make this a smorgasbord using a little Quirin, a little Quinn, a little Scott, a little Beyer, a little this, a little that, throwing in this and that and every other thing and make a big smorgasbord on which most people get terrible indigestion. And consequently, he's doing very, very well. When I helped him pick pace lines in the beginning, he was doing 70%. Then I said, you're on your own from now on. He went down to 57%. And then he kept back. Now he's been doing consistently 60%. And that's what everybody can do. And he'll get better so long as he doesn't get real smart and hang out with a bunch of horse players. You tell him, hey, kid, you can't use a line like that. You can't do this. You can't go back to 90. Things like that. But he needs the money, folks. He's in an age when to lose a job is traumatic, and to find another one in this current economy is difficult, especially when you never worked for anybody but the phone company. And he was a rock and roll musician before that, which is even worse than working for the phone company. So, and I want to address just briefly, most of you don't look like you're terribly negatively affected by the neurotic economy of this country. That's why you're here, because you could afford to come even with the reduced price and everything. But there are a lot of clients who, when we warned them in 1987 that there was a recession around the corner, laughed, smiled, went on doing just what they were doing before, and paid no heed to our plea of let's get serious because it's coming. And you know, I don't know if any of you are guilty of this, but I used to talk about how easy it was to make about $105 a day by just betting a couple of $100 a day. And the first thing, you know, the response was to when I said that, anybody guess what the answer everybody gave me? I can't live on $105 a day. Universally, that's what they said. And yet they were losing $200 and $300 a day doing it their way, but they couldn't live on the $105 a day that they could have easily had. And if you can make $105 a day with relative ease, then merely by betting a little higher level, you can make whatever you need. This is not a difficult procedure. It is not easy. We've always emphasized that it's not easy, but by saying not easy, I'm using the definition of easy that horse players are so familiar with. How many of you get mails? 10 easy steps. Don't even need a racing form. Make $1,000 a day. Anybody ever get any of those? Huh? Easy. The big word is always easy. Well, I don't want to make it sound easy, but it is not that difficult. Now, what have we done? I know a lot of you can't see the blackboard, so just draw this on a piece of paper. Andy Beyer came out in 1975. He'd been preceded, but he did probably the best job of it. And he divided the race into how many races? One. True? One race, final time. And using final time, he came up with a procedure for making pars and variants from those pars and making track-to-track variants from that to affect that one element of pace, the final time. At that same time, Huey Moll had written a little book called The Race is Pace, 68 pages, in which he theorized. Unfortunately, he just theorized it. He didn't do anything to implement it. So the book, while it was widely read, did not get very many devotees procedurally to use it. He divided the race into three different races and threw in the second call. So what we have in this methodology is quite simple. So write it down. Three races. The first fraction, the second fraction, and the final fraction. Without deference to final time, because final time is the composite of those three fractions added together. So we broke the race into three different races. Then we added second call for a convenient fulcrum point. And so you had four looks at the same race. Now in phase one, which you will hear about in this seminar, which is an excellent program for getting contenders and or handicapping if you can't handle three segments of a race, divides it into two segments of a race. By adding the three components to the race, you get to have three times as much chance, in effect, of winning that race as you would with one element of time, the final call. It's that simple. Brohammer wrote a marvelous book in which what he's truly saying is we're breaking the race into three separate races and showing you the second call as a fulcrum point. So there are four looks at the race. Beyond that, what do we do? Now, I know that you're saying, well, what's he telling us? Are we wasting our time here? So it's three races. This is the most important element of the methodology. This is what people, if they grasp it, don't have to know anything more. If they know how to look at those three elements of the race relative to the other horses in the race, they can pick the winner. Or at least they can pick the winner a sufficient number of times to make what they need to make on a given day. If you want to do it the simple way, like we do in phase one, you divide the race into two elements, the second call and the third fraction. It's just a more simplified version. Now, why do we have that simplified version? I had a truck driver convict in that original group in 1975. I think you all know the story. I was saddled with people who had been convicted of crimes and misdemeanors, who had been sentenced to prison but were given probation, providing they went into some kind of therapy. And this fella, you know, there's a lot of convicts and prison-type people or nefarious-type of people who get involved in crimes have a kind of a language of their own, have a kind of a chiding that goes on between them. And they would kid each other about how stupid they were. And the guys who couldn't figure out feet per second and who couldn't figure out increments of more than one or two, they call them the dummies. So they said, hey, Doc, let's come up with a program for the dummies who can't figure feet per second or something. Because they would sit there, how do you get that? 1320 divided by what? And they couldn't use tenths. They tried to put fifths in a hand calculator. So this one very astute truck driver felon said, hey, you know what it's like? It's like you go and like watch Ed Sullivan. Ed Sullivan was on those days. Watch him on these variety shows or go to the circus some. You see those guys up there juggling? You see those guys, they can juggle 5, 6, 7, 8 bowling pins or balls and stuff. Boy, those guys, everybody looks at them in awe. Boy, how do you do that? He says, well, some handicappers, like Tom Brohammer, who he didn't know at that time. He wasn't a convict, despite what everybody thinks. He wasn't one of those people. But he says, you know, some dummies, he's talking about the half of the room, they can only juggle two things, and they can hardly keep two things going. So let's give them a method for juggling just a couple of things. So that's how phase one was born. Whereas phase three, we divided the race into three components. So the difference is that you just have one more ball to juggle. So those who can't juggle more than two components, start with phase one and practice your juggling there if you're having trouble with juggling three. Now, beyond dividing the race into three segments, with a look at second call, we came up with a third element, which proved to be the most satisfactory. What we were trying to do was to get the winner in the top four of any readout, of any component, 68% of the time, a minimum. Any factor which would produce the winner in its top four 68% of the time was considered viable. You read that in Brohammer's book. And some of the individual fractions, the composite of the three fractions added together, would get it close to 67, but the first component that got it 67 to 68% in the top four was sustained pace, which was what phase one is. Second call plus third fraction. That got it very close to 68% of the top four. Early pace was undependable. It would get it 70% of the time at certain tracks, certain days of the week. It would go down to 40% other tracks, other days of the week. So it was a factor, but it was not a single factor that would produce the winner universally. And when I say universally, I think I want to just go back a little bit moment here and tell you that for those of you who I have heard in the closet or heard complaining that this is a California method and it don't work nobody, all those California, you know, it works in California but nowhere else. Let me promise you one thing. This method in 1975 was not tested at California tracks. I have never tested any phase of this methodology at California tracks. That's a promise, and Jim Bradshaw, who does much of my research in the advanced programs, will verify this. We come to Las Vegas. We meet here, and we stay 2 weeks at a time. And we can't go to these tracks where they have parimutuel betting because they only have California, sometimes Chicago, Florida, and Louisiana Downs when it's running. But we go to like the Sahara where they have six or seven races. We take every small track we can find, every track all over the country, not the majors. We stay out of Chicago, stay out of New York, stay out of California. And that's where we test the programs. Because, folks, let me tell you something. If you want to move to California, you can all make a good living if you can stand the lower mutuals. Northern California is a little bit better. But in Southern California, you can test anything and make it work. At Aqueduct or Belmont, you can test anything and make it work. To win, get a method that works consistently and universally, you got to go to Timonium. You got to go to Penn National. You got to go to, I can name a dozen tracks that we test. Long Acres is one of our favorites. You've got to be able to make it win at the tracks that the experts say, oh, that's not real racing. It's real racing if that's where you live, believe me. And that's where the money is. So don't anybody ever leave this seminar. Or don't let anybody tell you that this is a California method. It most assuredly is not, and on purpose, too. Because even as dumb as I was in 1975, I knew that if anybody focused on a single track or a single circuit, they could eventually win on that circuit. Because things are unique to each given circuit. And if you sift out all the information, all the factors that are necessary to make it universal, you can win anywhere. That's why we have you keep a track profile of the tracks you play, because you... I have people call me all the time, hey, I'm going to play, like just recently in Hialeah, I'm going to go to Hialeah and play Hialeah. What's the profile? Well, the track's been closed for 2 years. How the hell do I know what the profile is? The guy's sitting right there at Hialeah. I said, hey, tell me. Keep it for a week and you tell me what the profile is. I mean, they think for some reason that because you're a Brohammer or a Marion Jones or a Sarton or somebody, you're supposed to know everything. Well, believe me, we don't. And that's probably as much the secret of our success as anything else. We don't know, but we sure as heck know how to find out. And that is what the drawback that many beginners don't realize. You cannot. You can get basic information. You can get your specific questions answered here today, which we're all going to do for you. But you cannot abdicate the responsibility for knowing what is going on at your track at a given moment to some outside so-called expert. You must be the expert at your track. If I had to give you dying advice, that would be it. Know thy track. And we've got many forums and many programs to teach you how to do that. So what are we doing? We are breaking the race down into three components with a look at the second call for early pace. Now we have composite ratings. The second call plus the third fraction is sustained pace. Too many people, and write this down or something so you remember, because I don't want anybody from this room telling me, oh boy, that sustained pace is sure getting all the closers, isn't it? Sustained pace horses aren't the closers. The third fraction, late pace, that's closers. Sustained pace is how many parts early? At least. So, all